The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, following Donald Trump's announcement that he would pause tariffs yesterday, one question was left unanswered. Will the threatened tariffs on pharmaceuticals still materialise, or would it mean a real sigh of relief for the Irish pharma industry? Unfortunately, it will not, because Trump confirmed in the Oval Office last night that he still intends to roll out tariffs on pharmaceuticals to encourage the industry to reshore or onshore to the United States. So can our pharmaceutical industry here withstand any potential tariffs? Well, we're joined by Gareth Sheridan, who's the CEO of Nutriband. Talk to him in a moment. He's with me in studio. And on the line is Billy Keller, MEP for Ireland South. Good morning, Billy.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, let's talk first of all about where we stand. Donald Trump appeared to ignore the fact that Europe had agreed to apply reciprocal tariffs. Because they haven't been enacted, they were not due to be enacted for several days, he seemed to ignore them. So what's your info?
Well, I mean, the info is that we just clearly have a president who is very unpredictable, that we can't depend on in terms of any certainty anymore. So clearly, while there has been a pause on the tariffs for 90 days, there's still question marks around whether or not he plans to roll out tariffs on specific sectors, that would have an impact from an Irish perspective in the pharmaceutical, medical devices, life sciences. But the issue of concern here is that, you know, we now have a situation where the European Union was bringing forward reciprocal retaliatory tariffs, but equally also offered the opportunity to sit down and negotiate and discuss around the issue zero tariff for zero tariff. And we now have had this decision by the President of the United States to suspend the implementation of his tariff regime. But what is important, I think, is that the United States clearly was beginning to feel the pressure of this, you know, unpredictable tariff rate rollout that President Trump was announcing, because you could have looked at US Treasury bond yields, etc., were beginning to climb and they were beginning to run into difficulty. So I think there was a number of reasons why he announced the pause. I think definitely industry was speaking to the president, and I know that, you know, large international companies that have huge volumes of trade across the globe were also in the president's ear over the last number of days saying that what he was doing was reckless.
Yeah. Now, the tariffs that were being instituted by the EU included things like chainsaws and washing machines, motorcycles, and fruit and nut, basically. They were in response to the tariffs on aluminium and steel, which are still there. So surely Europe then would be entitled to continue with that response.
Well, yes. I mean, those tariffs were identified some time ago. They basically are in the agricultural commodity area, and as you reference, chainsaws and other items. But we did not go after the main areas that, you know, are of huge concern, of course, and critically important to trade across the Atlantic, and that's the digital service space. So, I mean, the European Union was very measured in its response to the steel and aluminium tariffs that were announced some time ago.
But can you clarify whether these tariffs will go ahead by the EU, because they're not in response to yesterday or to the proposed excessive tariffs that he was talking about? They're in response to aluminium and steel, which are still in place.
Yes, and of course, that is an opportunity now for the European Union to actually engage in real discussions with the Trump regime around this particular issue, whether or not they will actually be triggered. But they were put in place primarily for tariffs that are still in place, and that is the steel and aluminium. So, I mean, if the European Union is to show that it is going to defend its interests, that it is willing to retaliate, well, then clearly, you know, those tariffs will roll out. But there's still time for their implementation. And in the event of the United States further, you know, bringing back its threats on tariffs and looking at the whole steel and aluminium tariff, which is causing huge difficulties for the entire car sector, both in the United States and the European Union. And what's interesting is the largest exporter of cars from the United States is actually BMW from their plant in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be very damaging both to the car industry in Europe and also the export of cars from the United States, which are primarily European designed cars.
Now, the question of pharma, what is the mood in Brussels about protecting the pharma industry? And it's not alone in Ireland. The Netherlands and Belgium are big players. And I'm sure there are others scattered around at the 27 who make stuff that ends up in America.
Yeah, look, there's deep concern because, I mean, the fact is that nobody knows what he's going to do. And the fact that he has mentioned specifically pharmaceutical sector again only in the last couple of days, even when he was planning to rescind his threats of a 20% blanket tariff across the globe, he has still referenced the issue of pharmaceuticals. And even as late as last night in Washington, he references at a function as well. So there's deep concern. I mean, you have the Netherlands, Belgium, Germany, Northern Italy, Ireland itself. I mean, Ireland is third or fourth largest exporter of pharmaceuticals in the globe. So it is a significantly worrying time. And I think that we have to do everything from an Irish perspective discussions in terms of Irish government, the Irish minister. I know that the Taoiseach has been out in Washington discussing that issue. But I think collectively we have to point out that if there is a tariff on pharmaceuticals, life sciences, medical devices, it will have a significant impact on American citizens. You know, straight away, the price of medicines and medical devices will go up. And I think, you know, maybe the fact that there's a pause, President Trump probably now at this stage realizes that this was very damaging to the broader American economy. And as you said, when you look at the bond yields, you know, they had a US auction bond of $39 billion. Now it went off okay, but it certainly shows that, you know, they are very vulnerable to an increase in serving their debt, and due to the fact that their debt is massive. It's 120% of their actual overall economy, which is nearly $30 trillion.
Now, hypocrisy is his middle name. I was watching an old clip of Letterman when Trump, in his pre-politics days, was launching a range of clothing. Where was the tie made? China. Where was the shirt made? Cambodia or Vietnam, et cetera, et cetera. And last night, Jimmy Kimmel on his show took out a whole pile of Trump merchandise, MAGA hats, which will double now. They're made in China. Water bottles made in China. All Trump branded stuff. All of it made in China. It's extraordinary, the effrontery of the man. Anyway, that's perhaps for a deeper analysis in the post-Trump era. But anyway, Billy, you are optimistic or otherwise that we can get a deal?
Well, I think at least there's a bit of reason now, or a bit of theory maybe even entering into, you know, Donald Trump and his mind and his regime. I mean, bear in mind the vast majority of them have been very hawkish on this particular issue of tariffs and disrupting international trade, you know, undermining the world order. But very quickly, look, markets dictate many things. And I mean, governments can't just ignore markets. You know, you ignore these markets at your peril. And as I said, the United States is very vulnerable. And the one thing that Donald Trump should learn, you know, it has been shown in history, never open a war on several fronts. And Donald Trump has done that with China, with the European Union, with Mexico, with Canada, and many of his allies around the world, South Korea, Japan. And I think that, you know, he's just realized that at the end of the day, no matter how powerful the United States is, it is in a world order. It has obligations, but equally it has vulnerabilities when the rest of the world looks at it very differently and, you know, was looking at America not playing its part in the world order that we were used to.
Billy Keller, MEP for Ireland South, thank you very much for joining us. As I say, in studio with me is Gareth Sheridan, CEO of Nutriband. Gareth, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
You're a pharma company. Tell me what you do.
So Nutriband is a pharma company particularly focused on transdermal technology. So transdermal just simply means delivery through the skin. Think of a nicotine patch, for example. We've targeted the pain segment of the pharmaceutical industry and developed a technology called Aversa, which makes it very difficult for pain medications to be abused or used incorrectly, but equally as important, makes it accessible to the pain community who have had their access cut in recent years because of the negative stigma. We've all seen the Dope Sick documentaries and the shows on Netflix and so on. So we've seen firsthand what a lack of access to adequate care and medications does to just a small segment of the pharmaceutical industry overhaul. And it's quite concerning. You know, we're in a position now to tackle that head on. But I think the thing we are taking away from that as a US-based, US manufacturing pharmaceutical company is that the human impact at the heart of these discussions with tariffs on pharmaceuticals is what needs to be top
okay,
of the
market. So you manufacture in the United States for the American market. Do you also export to Europe?
We're building into that and working into that now. We're patented in 46 countries, so we are expanding internationally.
Okay, but if the EU was to have reciprocal sanctions on pharma, you wouldn't be affected really yet?
We would have to certainly make preparations for that, sure. And we are having those kind of contingency
conversations.
So
you might have to manufacture here?
Sure. And that was always actually a goal. I'm a very proud Irishman. It was always a goal to bring the company home. You know, that was part of the narrative and that was part of the journey that I foresaw with the company. But the US was where we went because the pain community there and the pain space there is where the market was. And that was the reason for that.
So in terms of that market, you're not fearful unless you get some raw ingredients for your pain technologies from outside the United States.
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, that will certainly be impacted. It is a smaller percentage of the overall makeup of the cost of the product, so we won't be hugely impacted. But certainly we will feel the negative fallout from that. And the main issue is that I want to, you know, reinforce that this can't become a tit for tat, you know, argumentative negotiation. I mean, let's leave that to the motor vehicles and the motorbikes. I mean, we're talking about people's lives at the end of
the
day.
You're talking about the patient.
Exactly. The patient is the one that's going to suffer here. And Billy alluded to it, that if these tariffs go ahead, medications are going to be 25% more expensive in a system that's already strained and has a negative reputation in terms of cost effectiveness. So we're looking at people that won't be able to afford chemotherapies, won't be able to afford antibiotics, won't be able to afford, you know, basic treatments that we should have as a human. And people will die, and they'll die because they can't afford to live.
Now, on one level, there's a certain logic to some of the ambitions of Trump. For example, if they are dependent on the rest of the world for antibiotics, that in the event of some terrible medical emergency, a pandemic that required antibiotics or some sort of epidemic, that they couldn't supply themselves, that they'd be vulnerable to Europe or China maybe cutting off their supply. So there's a certain logic of having a level of self, of independence, if you like, in production. But
sure. I mean, there's a certain logic to it. And we've saw, you know, during COVID, That particular scenario was actually teased somewhat, and we saw a little bit of a fallout in the global supply chain.
I mean, looking for PPE only from China.
Right, exactly. And so I'm sure that's part of the reasoning that they're coming, you know, discussing tariffs on pharmaceuticals in general. But, you know, it's not as simple as it's being discussed in terms of.
I mean, it's quite clear not everybody can make everything.
Right.
That, I mean, that ideal that every country would have a total sustainable industry in every sector is just not realistic in the modern world.
Correct. I mean, we've been building the pharmaceutical industry in Ireland for 5 decades now, slowly and steadily, and attracting the right companies, attracting the personnel, attracting the talent that's necessary to do that. You cannot reverse that in the space of a year or even within the remaining term of this presidency. So that needs to be part of the conversation.
So the Irish companies, for example, that are exporting some of them raw ingredients and some of them obviously the finished product into America, if they were to try to onshore, typically how long does it take to establish a pharmaceutical plant?
Well, I can give you an example there. So we were considering moving 3 miles over in the same state of North Carolina to a different town because it was a bigger facility and it would have increased our capacity. And we decided to hold off on doing that because the downtime we would have faced in terms of re-registering equipment updates, getting approval from the FDA to manufacture again, we were looking at years. And now we're having conversations about moving countries entirely. You know, it's not 3 miles anymore, it's 3,000 miles. The red tape involved in terms of what's being discussed, I don't think is quite understood. The registrations that would be necessary, the supply chains that
don't
exist.
But you know that he's talking about eliminating regulation. And when you've got attacks on the CDC and the FDA and, you know, putting Trump acolytes into all of those key positions, he figures he can create a fair wind or an unfair wind, if you like, for companies.
Yeah, and I just don't think that translates well to, you know, removing regulation with the FDA. Whatever about other government agencies that are being discussed, you know, they could make an argument for that. But when you're removing regulations from life-saving treatments, that is a recipe for disaster. And I don't think it would ever go ahead. I mean, anybody with a basic understanding of how an antibiotic works could understand why that's a bad idea. So I would hope that that does not become any serious part of the narrative we're hearing. And I would be, you know, quite confident that it doesn't. I mean, there's enough advisors there that would be able to pinpoint that as a particular catastrophe on a global level.
So what precisely does Ireland export to the United States?
Yes, it's a combination of many different factors. So we have ingredients that's been highlighted recently that, you know, that are still finished and capped and marketed in the United States. But we also manufacture and export finished products. And we're not talking about you know, unserious products here at the same time. We're talking about antibiotics. We're talking about chemotherapies. We're talking about heart disease medications. We're talking about pain medications, which I'm familiar with. These are all, you know, treatments and medications that can't afford a disruption in the supply chain on a global level. People that ultimately are going to die, and they're going to die because they'll be priced out of having adequate care. In the, you know, in the pain segment of the pharmaceutical industry, we've actually been collecting data on patients that have taken their own life because of inadequate care, patients that have turned to illegal drugs because of inadequate care. I mean, this will all expand now into patients that can't afford medications, you know, for cancer treatment, that will ultimately probably we will see an increase on suicide rates because of the burden that they'll be facing from a financial perspective.
Now, the other question is insurance companies, for many Americans who are well insured in their jobs or privately, if they've got the cash, the insurance company picks up the tab. But if the tab goes up by 25%?
Look, insurance companies are already extremely unpopular. I can tell
and
you
we
that
saw the murder of that CEO.
Exactly. That will give you an idea of the how insurance companies are you know, thought of, I guess, in the United States. And if you want to get to a position now where insurance companies are going to refuse covering treatments because of a 25% hike, I can't imagine what the outcome of that would be. Ultimately, they're not set up and they're not in a position to take a 25% hike. The cost is built in many cases, particularly for things like Medicaid. They have pricing built in. They have to have a reserve in place. The capital and the structure is not there for them to absorb a 25% hike in pharmaceuticals. Then you could argue, will the pharmaceuticals companies absorb a 25% hike? I can't imagine so. Pharmaceutical companies don't have a great reputation either for being patient focused. So ultimately, we're going to be looking at a patient that's going to be facing not 1, 2, 3% potential hikes in their cost of medication. We're talking about a 25% hike, which is going to price them out of care. And that's the problem we're looking at. And you know, we might as well mention here that it's on the decision makers and the negotiators on both sides now to come to an agreement that makes sense, keeping the patient atop of the narrative. Because if it becomes a, you know, an ego measuring competition and the EU push back now and pharmaceuticals are right in the middle of this because nobody wants to back down, then we're going to see the same effect over here where people are going to get priced out of medications and treatments as well. It's okay if you get priced out of a Harley Davidson. It's not okay to get priced out of
And what do they sell to us, the Americans, in terms of pharma?
There is pharma components that are sold back here, like capsules, for example, that actually are used to encapsulate the ingredients. Mm-hmm. So things like that, they also come from, you know, places like China, which are facing tariffs now. We don't know what the fallout from that is going to be. Right now, we're on track for 1,000% tariffs either side at the rate we're going. So it's going to be very disruptive from a global supply chain perspective, and it's already very delicate.
How dependent is the United States on Chinese pharma?
I think more so than we've been hearing. I think China, you know, is a big contributor to raw ingredients that are used in pharmaceuticals. And this will obviously have a detrimental impact, because even if they're not exporting directly to the United States, they'll export to places like, you know, Ireland, for example, where we'll make the finished product and send to the United States. But that will still increase costs at the end of the day, because there'll be an additional step in the supply chain at that point that isn't set up.
But also, are they going to be looking at whatever is coming from different pharma companies and say, how much of that is Chinese? Because we're putting 100% on that bit.
I think that would
be a bit like car parts.
That's a very real possibility. You know, coming back to the pain space again, America's strength here and what they're relying on in terms of their negotiation is the market. Okay. So the pain management segment of the pharmaceutical industry, for example, the United States is 50% of the global market. So that'll give you an idea of where they're coming from in terms of their perspective on this. But what's not being thought of is how complicated tariffs on pharmaceuticals really are. And that's needs to be more part of the discussion. It's not all market size. It's not all, you know, statistics, and it's not all economics. There's a human aspect to this that needs to be considered on a deeper level. It needs to be higher up in the narrative.
What about those who say, look, there are loads of pharma plants in the United States. All they have to do is kind of build a new shed around the side and they start manufacturing the stuff. It's not rocket science. It's chemistry.
Yeah, and it's also not automated. You need people. I mean, we've been building up the people to manufacture these pharmaceuticals, as I said, for 50 years. And actually, the Irish people that work in this space should be commended for their contributions to the medical field and to global pharmaceuticals. I think that's not being talked about enough. But you can't just go over, purchase a plant in Michigan, throw in some equipment and start pumping out chemotherapy drugs. This is the problem we're facing. The red tape involved and the personnel involved and the time involved is going to make that next to impossible.
But you believe that's appropriate red tape?
Absolutely, absolutely it's appropriate red tape. I mean, the FDA, it will take years for you to get a pharmaceutical product to market with the FDA, and I think that's the correct approach because we're talking again about people's lives. It can't be rushed, you can't cut corners. These are life and death scenarios for many people. So the red tape should not be reduced. It should not be gotten rid of. You know, as a pharmaceutical executive, of course, I'd like to see less red tape in the space. But as a human, I can't bring myself to actually push for that.
Because you want safety above all.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't be able to live with myself if we cut corners and it resulted in deaths.
We're dealing with someone, though. A few tumblers of bleach will cure your COVID. I mean, that's the problem.
Yeah, and that's kind of the theme of the negotiations I've seen so far. That's the problem. It's not being thought out clearly. It's being looked at particularly from a numbers perspective. And it's not just on the US side. I mean, you could actually make the point that the discussion around tariffs could benefit the United States in terms of reducing future investment in places like Ireland. For example, pharmaceutical companies will be more reluctant now to leave the United States. Mm. Bringing them back is a whole different discussion. And that needs to be very patient focused because we've seen what a very small disruption done to the supply chain during COVID. That's a minuscule idea of what we would be facing in terms of tariffs of these sort of levels.
Well, sensible talk from you, Gareth, but let's hope that'll be sensible talk in the negotiations which are bound to follow. Gareth Sheridan, who's CEO of Nutriband, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.